Welcome to the Not Old Better Show, the show covering all things health, wellness, culture, and more. The show for all of us who aren't old, we're better. Each week, we'll interview superstars, experts, and ordinary people doing extraordinary things, all related to this wonderful experience of getting better, not older. Now, here's your host, the award-winning Paul Vogelzang.
Welcome to a special episode of the Not Old Better Show on radio and podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by newspapers.com. And today we journey through time, merging the wisdom of the past with the pulse of the present. As we navigate the complexities of today's world, we're inspired to look back at the ideals that shaped the foundation of our democracy, the pursuit of happiness, virtue, and the unalienable rights that bind us across generations. In this riveting episode, we sit down with Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and a beacon of knowledge on constitutional debates. Together, we'll explore the profound influence of classical writers on virtue and how their teachings inspired the lives of America's founders, shaping the bedrock of our nation. Jeffrey Rosen's latest work, The Pursuit of Happiness, wonderful new book. I can't recommend it highly enough to you all, but in it, you'll find that it isn't just a big deep dive into history, it's a lens through which we can all examine what happiness truly means in the fabric of American democracy.
These are notes on Cicero's Tusculan Disputations. This morning, haze obscures the firmament. Sunlight and clouds in serried blue alloy. A narrow clearing opens, fortune sent. I glimpse a sparkling sunbeam and feel joy. Stoics praise calm joy without elation, its motion placid and to reason alarmed. When it transports with wanton exultation, it fires the perturbations of a mind. The four disordered passions are emotions that lack the moderation reason brings. Elation, lust, fear, grief are their commotions. Prudence and temperance are their golden rings. The soul that's tranquil, calm, restrained, at rest. The happy soul, the subject of our quest.
That, of course, is our guest today, Jeffrey Rosen, reading a brief passage from his new book, The Pursuit of Happiness, How Classical Writers on Virtue Inspired the Lives of the Founders and Defined America. Why think about happiness, especially a version of happiness from 250 years ago? Well, through our conversation today, we will uncover the founder's unique interpretation of happiness, even at 250 years old, which really is a quest for lifelong virtue over fleeting pleasure, and how this century-old wisdom can guide us in today's age of information overload, social media, and the ongoing quest for self-improvement and community connection. Join us as we bridge the gap between the enduring aspirations of the founding fathers and the contemporary challenges faced by aging adults. Let's explore together how the pursuit of happiness and virtue can illuminate our paths to living our best lives, fostering a dialogue that's as enriching as it is enlightening. This is the Not Old Better Show on radio and podcast, where history meets the moment and wisdom inspires progress. Jeffrey Rosen, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you.
So nice to talk with you, too. I have to tell you, just a big congratulations on this wonderful book, The Pursuit of Happiness. It really caught me off guard. It's getting a ton of attention in my research, all really very positive attention, too, by the way, Jeffrey Rosen. In my research of you and in anticipation of our conversation today, I found that you didn't initially plan to write this book, and maybe I got that right or wrong, so maybe tell me if I did that, but also maybe share what was it that inspired you to write a book like this, especially one about happiness and virtues.
It is absolutely right that I didn't expect to write this book or any book. It was kind of an unusual COVID reading project that I began, just sort of did for its own sake, and then the book kind of emerged from that. And the reading project emerged from a series of synchronicities. I noticed that Ben Franklin and his famous project to achieve moral perfection, where he created 13 virtues that he tried to practice every day, had chosen as his motto a book that I'd never heard of, The Tusculan Disputations by Cicero, which said, without virtue, happiness cannot be. And then a few weeks later, I saw on the wall of the Boar's Head Inn in Charlottesville, Virginia, on the UVA campus, a list of almost 12 identical virtues that Thomas Jefferson had assembled. And he also, I learned, when asked what the meaning of happiness was, would distribute a quotation from this book by The Tusculan Disputations. So I thought I should read Cicero because it was so important to Franklin and Jefferson's notion of happiness. And then I had to figure out what else to read. And then I came across this amazing reading list that Thomas Jefferson would send to kids who were going to college and people who wanted to be educated when he was old. And in the section on ethics or natural religion, I found Cicero along with a series of books of classical moral philosophy that I'd never read, most of them, Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, Epictetus, and then some enlightened philosophers as well. So basically, I just set out during COVID to read the books because I thought I should. It was a gap in my education. I had a wonderful liberal arts education and have studied literature and history and political philosophy and law, but had never read these books of classic moral philosophy. And that's what I did during my COVID year. I just would wake up early, read from the books, and watch the sunrise. And what I learned transformed my understanding of happiness. I came to see that for the founders and for the ancient philosophers, happiness was not feeling good, but being good, not the pursuit of pleasure, but the pursuit of virtue. And after that transformative understanding came to me, I figured it might be interesting to write a book about how the founders apply this wisdom in their own lives.
We're so glad you did. And also in my research of you, you have an excellent education. You're the president and CEO of the National Constitution Center, a life that is important and one that is very valued. Self-improvement might not have been so high on your list, perhaps. I'm so pleased to be talking with you because I think self-improvement is high on all of our lists, but you're pretty improved. So,
not at all. One effect of this amazing literature is to make you feel like a total slacker. You're just squandering your time and wasting your days. And certainly a love of reading and books and music installed by my incredible parents and developed some habits of reading during my great education, but I'd missed these books of moral philosophy. And I remember craving a guide for how to live a purpose-driven life when I was in college, because this kind of framework, which provided a spiritual and moral framework for so many generations, for so many centuries, had kind of fallen out of the curriculum and also fallen out of pop culture by the time I was in college in the 80s. So I was extremely glad to have found it later in life.
Yeah, interesting you bring up pop culture because there's so much out there today. There's so many conflicting messages about health and well-being. And it just struck me as I was reading this book, again, we're with Jeffrey Rosen, author of the new book, The Pursuit of Happiness, just a wonderful, wonderful book for our times. How do we filter through some of the noise and really focus on this? I have a good sense about what you do. What advice would you give our audience to kind of get to this point where we can really make some contributions to our own happiness?
Make time for deep reading. It is a radical act of self-assertion and self-improvement. And just the simple act of turning the devices off for a couple hours a day, for me, was really the key. It was the habit of getting up early before sunrise, doing some deep reading, watching the sunrise, and then beginning the day that just opened up this world of learning to me. And it just blows my mind that I was able to do all this reading because all the books are free and online. And then for so much of human history, people struggled to get access to books and they fought and they struggled for it. And all we need, they're just waiting for us. All we need is the discipline to do it. And I know despite my great education and all the privilege I'd had, I'd fallen out of the habit of deep daily reading on topics outside of my immediate work. And having done that for a year, I've kept up the habit and still use the mornings in that way. And it's the greatest gift that anyone can give themselves.
Today's episode is brought to you by newspapers.com. Discover your mom in the paper when you search newspapers.com. Find the stories that made her who she is today by searching the largest online newspaper archive. Newspapers.com makes it easy to find your mom, grandma, and any others in the papers. Search more than 945 million pages from major news titles to small town papers. Uncover birth and marriage announcements, obituaries, photos, and much, much more. Explore papers dating back to 1690 or as recent as last month. Newspapers.com is used by millions of people every month for genealogy, historical research, and much, much more. Find something you like with Newspapers.com. It's a snap to save and share articles with family and friends or attach them directly to your ancestry tree. Use promo code NOTOLDBETTER for a 20% discount on your subscription. That's code NOTOLDBETTER. All of this will be in our show notes. Not Old Better, and celebrate the stories of a lifetime with newspapers.com. Thanks, everybody. Impressive again, Jeffrey Rosen. I'd like to drill down a little bit and talk about three of these virtues that the founders really established: hard work, industry, temperance, humility. Oh my gosh, I just think about this, especially in light of everything that's going on in the world today. And I wonder if you take those three and discuss how we can lead a life of fulfillment and have some meaningful opportunities to serve a vibrant life and do so in some of our golden years. The age of our audience is north of 55. I'm 67, yet I'm still seeking. I still want this kind of fulfillment. What would you say about industry and temperance and humility that can inspire us a little bit today?
Well, first of all, the golden years are exactly the right time to rediscover these youthful habits and to practice these virtues. For the founders, for the classic philosophers, retirement was the time of leisure. And Louis Brandeis was so excited to learn that the Greek word for leisure was unemployment, aeskolai. And he said, what a happy land, because unemployment meant that you could devote more of your time to self-perfection, to self-improvement, to cultivating your faculties and engaging in that learning and growth that we didn't have time to do when we were working just for money. So temperance and humility in industry. First of all, it's important to see all of these as related virtues that allow us to master the perturbations of the mind, as Cicero so well put it. And the classical antithesis between reason and passion is a synonym for emotion, is the core of this ancient moral philosophy and psychology. The idea is that we have an opportunity to use our powers of reason to moderate and temper our unreasonable passions and emotions so that we achieve the calm temperance or harmony of the soul that itself defines virtue and defines happiness. The Eastern wisdom traditions talk about how we are what we think, and life is shaped by the mind, as the Dhammapada puts it, or the Bhagavad Gita: by renouncing attachment to the external results of our action, we can enjoy eternal tranquility and freedom. You see how important temperance is. The idea isn't that we lack emotion or passion, but just that we overcome our unproductive, ego-based emotions like anger, jealousy, and fear, so we can achieve the tranquility that allows us to use our time productively, to be our best self and to serve others. That's why Adam Smith defines the temperance as a kind of tranquility of the soul, which itself is another word for virtue. And that's what you're trying to achieve, that kind of calm focus on the task at hand, on the deep reading or thinking or creative work, poetry or songs or art, that allow you to express your true self and connect to the divine harmonies of the universe. So that's why tranquility is so important. Industry is perhaps the greatest takeaway of this practice. The founders fell short of many of these virtues, as we all do. Every moment of the day, it's extremely hard to keep your temper, your focus, not to be driven by your immediate impulses and by anger, by jealousy. But it's all about the practice of a habit. So if you just develop a habit of this reading or creative work at a particular time of day, you can sustain that industry throughout your golden years. And it's so inspiring to see what deep readers the founders were into their 80s. I've just been so inspired by Jefferson and Adams trading book recommendations of the translations of the Bhagavad Gita and making all sorts of connections among the wisdom traditions until the end of their lives. And finally, there's humility, which is so crucial. Franklin saved that one for last. It wasn't on his initial list of 13, but a Quaker friend told me we had to work on humility, and he added it to the list. Imagine a book, Humility by Benjamin Franklin. It's tough to practice. But humility is not a kind of self-abnegation. I am but a worm in the world. It's not a Puritan sense of humility. Humility is a sense of, again, overcoming our ego-based emotions and impulses so that we can serve our long-term interests and also serve society. It's recognizing that we're really just parts of a whole. We have a part to play. And by improving ourselves, by cultivating our own unique talents and dispositions, we can best contribute to society and serve others. And do it that way. It's less arduous. You don't have to be as perfect as Jesus and Socrates, which was Franklin's model for achieving humility, because they represented a kind of perfection of humility that no humans have easily approached. But just by viewing ourselves as part of this whole, we can begin to approach the humility that allows us to fulfill our potential.
Humility, I think that's so nice, the way you present that and the way you profile these influential founders and their writings. It strikes me that humility can lead us to understand what I'll refer to, what in my research I found that you refer to, some of the blind spots that the founders had, in particular with regard to slavery, that the pursuit of virtue was incompatible with enslavement of African Americans. And I wonder how do we get past that today to overcome some of our personal blind spots, especially when it comes to social justice and equality, and do that in a way that is humble and takes advantage of some of these traits of humility that you're suggesting?
It's so important to recognize that far from justifying slavery, the founders recognized their own hypocrisy about it. But there's that really striking quote from Patrick Henry, who said, "Is it not amazing that I, who think that slavery violates natural law, myself own slaves? I will not justify it. I won't attempt to. It's simple avarice or greed. I can't do with the inconvenience of living without them." And that moment of candor, the simple fact they knew it was wrong, but they liked the lifestyle it made possible and didn't want to give it up, really was expressed by other founders in moments of candor as well. Jefferson, who was even more riven by self-denial and self-justification than many of the others, also recognized on some level it was the fact that he was just addicted to the lifestyle that it made possible. That is sobering for our times. Someone pointed out to me in a recent conversation that our own reaction to the reality of climate change calls to mind a similar avarice or greed. Many of us, I'll speak for myself, know that our habits are imposing burdens on future generations, but we just like the lifestyle that these technologies and fuels make possible, and we don't want to give it up. So it's often the case in every generation that people fail to practice the virtues when they really chafe, when you have to give something up to practice them. And at the very least, recognizing our own hypocrisies and shortcomings may make us less likely to either judge past generations or exalt ourselves, because it's in the very nature of the quest to fall short of these virtues.
And again, we're with Jeffrey Rosen. Jeffrey Rosen is the president and CEO of the National Constitution Center, written the new book, The Pursuit of Happiness, How Classical Writers on Virtue Inspired the Lives of the Founders and Defined America. I want to talk to you about happiness now, and talk particularly about the idea of an older age population advocating for overcoming some of these ideas of isolation and loneliness. Mental health is such an important part of the aging process, and many are suffering, and the pandemic brought a lot of that on. But we need to advocate on behalf of happiness. What did you learn in your research and about these founders that can give us a sense about how we can begin to be happier as we get older, knowing that it is one of the inalienable rights?
It's so empowering for me to realize that for Jefferson and the founders, the core definition of happiness came from a book on grief. The Tusculan Disputations by Cicero is about how to overcome terrible grief. In Cicero's case, the death of a daughter or tragedy. And the very empowering message of the Stoics is that we are what we think. Life is shaped by the mind, and by abandoning attachment to things we can't control, like the thoughts and actions of others, we can focus on what we can control, which is our own thoughts and actions, and we can convert unproductive thoughts and emotions to productive ones. And it's a very, very powerful message in old age when all of us struggle with health and isolation, that we have it within our own power to create a world of connection and productivity. It's simply by disciplining our thoughts and actions so we can turn unproductive thoughts to productive ones and to productive habits, and developing these habits in retirement of deep reading, or people find painting or music. Creative work is so important to produce something creative, to make something every day, to make something of ourselves and of our minds and our talents. And then perhaps to be able to share it with others as well is deeply connecting. So it's a confusing world with these new technologies, which can connect us to others, but also by doing so in superficial ways can end up isolating. And it's very striking that feelings of isolation and depression are associated with social media use. In some ways, just the life hack of using these technologies mindfully and mostly creating spaces of contemplation and productivity and self-mastery and developing those habits in old age are a very empowering message.
In the pursuit of happiness, you do refer to this social media, material success, instant gratification. And I think the suggestion that you make to take some time out, to pause and reflect and maybe take an hour and do some deep reading and some deep thought, I think that alone, to shut off some of the devices, can help us understand that happiness is not fleeting, that we can have it today, and it's empowering.
It changed my life. I mean, this is a new habit. I have fallen out of the habit of deep reading that I didn't have to do. And now when I wake up in the morning, I have a rule. I'm just not allowed to turn on the device. I can't browse or check email. Of course, I'm tempted to every morning, but it's just I have a rule and I can't. And I found that wonderful privilege of watching the sunrise. The sunrise is the most glorious, extraordinary beauty in the world. It's so beautiful, and it happens every morning, and it's different every morning. And to be able to do the reading and then watch the sunrise and maybe write a poem, or I've started writing songs, which is a very, very fulfilling thing to do after watching the sunrise. It's just so satisfying, and no one can take this away from me. I can do this every day. All I need is the discipline to keep the habit going. So Adams, Jefferson, Cicero all thought that retirement was the golden time to read and grow, to retire with your books, really, is what they thought. And for me, it's changed. I just turned 60, and it's changed the way I think about the years ahead. I'm just looking forward to using these years to continue to do this reading and writing and creative work, and that's what I'm going to do.
And it seems as though you really found this deeply for yourself, but you also found it in the founders, that pursuit of a common good can inspire, that we can foster some unity, some understanding, irrespective of what our roles are generationally, and despite the ideological divides that we're seeing in our country, that this was contemplated by these founders in their writing to pursue these virtues in overcoming some of this.
It was so exciting and significant for me to learn that this ancient wisdom inspired not only the first generation of the founders, who came from very different political and philosophical perspectives, from Hamilton, the nationalist, to Jefferson, the states' rights advocate. It also inspired women like Mercy Otis Warren, the great anti-federalist and friend of John Adams, Phyllis Wheatley, the first great Black poet. It inspired Frederick Douglass, who came across this wisdom on the streets of Baltimore in a book that he bought with bread. He paid boys to teach him how to read and bought this book, The Columbian Orator, which had the wisdom in it, and it inspired him to become the greatest abolitionist of his time. And then it inspired people like Louis Brandeis and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whose mother learned it on the streets of the Lower East Side as an immigrant and shared the wisdom with her. So this is a glorious tradition of individual freedom that belongs to all of us. It's inspired men and women of all race, creeds, and colors over the generation. And it's so exciting to be able to rediscover it.
You generously read one of the sonnets, and it was from the Tusculan Disputations. Do I have that pronounced correctly? The Tusculan Disputations?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for doing that. I would almost describe that as kind of a self-help book. Would you describe The Pursuit of Happiness as a form of self-help? It's rooted, of course, in this wonderful historical wisdom, but it seems as though we need this. We need this help right now.
The Tusculan Disputations is absolutely a self-help book, and all of the books on Jefferson's reading list are self-help books. And I hope that people will experience The Pursuit of Happiness as a kind of self-help book, in the sense that by reading the stories of these founders and how they were inspired to improve themselves, I was inspired to improve my own life. And this idea of self-help, which was first called The Pursuit of Happiness, and then Frederick Douglass called it self-reliance, Alexis de Tocqueville called it self-interest, properly understood. Emerson called it the American idea, which was emancipation. This idea of self-help as the American idea was so central to our national identity. And as we turn to 250 in 2026, it's great to resurrect this wonderful tradition of American self-help.
Jeffrey Rosen, our guest today, author of the wonderful new book, The Pursuit of Happiness. I just can't recommend this enough. We'll have links so that our audience can find out more about Jeffrey Rosen, his new book, his work, and all that he is doing on behalf of all of us with this fantastic book, The Pursuit of Happiness. I'll just say again, Jeffrey Rosen, what a pleasure it is. Congratulations on your book. Please come back and talk to us again. You're just inspiring, and this work is equally inspiring. I love Jefferson's message about without virtue, happiness cannot be. You have a favorite besides that?
Oh, gosh. There's so many ways of putting the wisdom, but I dedicated this book to my dad, who died at the age of 95, just as I was finishing it. And he had a quotation from Paracelsus, the 16th century mystic, that really inspires me. And that's, as we imagine ourselves to be, so shall we be.
Wonderful. Jeffrey Rosen, thank you so much for your time, for your reading, for all your work. And again, my best to you. Congratulations. And selfishly, please come back and talk to us again.
That would be the greatest pleasure. Thanks for a great conversation. And to all the great listeners out there, happy reading.
Thank you. My thanks to newspapers.com for sponsoring today's episode. Please support our sponsors as they in turn support the show. My thanks to Jeffrey Rosen and his team at National Constitution Center for making today's interview possible. My thanks to you, our wonderful Not Old Better Show audience here on radio and podcast. Also, I want to mention the fine work of our executive producer, Sam Haniger, and wish Sam the best here. I want to wish all of you the very best. Be well, be safe, and let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show on radio and podcast. Thanks, everyone. We will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Not Old Better Show. To find out more about all of today's stories or to view our extensive back catalog of previous shows, simply visit notold-better.com. Join us again next time as we deep dive into some of the most fascinating real-life stories from across the world, all focused on this wonderful experience of getting better, not just older. Let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show.